And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this rainy Monday afternoon. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki. Bridget Riedel has the day off, so we are joined by Bill Hale. Bill, congratulations, and thank you for joining us.
and you brought rain, man. I'm sitting here enjoying these droplets on the window.
So explain to our listeners, first off, how did you get to fill in? But I'm glad you did.
Well, Bridget must have been pretty desperate. We've known each other for, I'm guessing, 7 or 8 years.
Okay.
I actually met on Twitter. We only lived 10 miles apart, but she had never seen beet harvest before. And back in 2018, I invited her to come ride along with one of our truck drivers through the piler, and she really kind of enjoyed beet harvest. It's different than almost anything else you do. And since then, we've talked about a lot of agriculture things. Both of us have been kind of boosters of Grand Farm, and pretty happy that's going. Lots of different things in agriculture happening in the Red River Valley.
Right. And so this rain is good, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Used to be $1 million rain. Now it's $1 billion.
Well, you're going to like what's coming up here over the next week to 10 days. We are in that stormy part of the LRC cycle between now and the end of the month. And what that means is we're going to see numerous chances for showers and thunderstorms. And yeah, just like this morning, we may have to deal with some bouts of severe weather, but I'll tell you, yeah, a nice gentle rain out there right now. And looking at radar, we've got the area of low pressure that's almost rotating directly overhead, right over the FM area. Actually, it's just a little bit northwest of town. And rain showers from the Fargo area northward. You go south, from Wahpeton southward, there's really not much. Now, if you have any travel plans going down towards the cities, they are going to have a bout of severe weather as we head into the afternoon. Our showers will come to an end here over the next couple of hours, and then we'll just be cloudy, but I think we'll see a few peaks of sun as we head through the evening hours. Don't expect a lot, except Southern Valley. I think you'll see a little more. And then mid-50s overnight tonight, a beautiful day tomorrow, around 80, 83 degrees with light northwest winds. That's a beautiful day.
Oh,
right?
Man.
That's perfect.
Yeah. You can't hardly find that this time
that's
of year.
Especially with light winds.
Yeah.
And then as we head through the rest of the week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all 3 days, a chance for showers and storms, but they're going to come, it looks like, in the overnight through the early morning hours, leaving hopefully the daytime hours drier with temperatures in the upper 70s to lower 80s, which is pretty close to normal. And then the weekend, we'll see a brief burst of heat with upper 80s to mid 90s, both Saturday and Sunday, before we cool it down with more rain as we head into next week. And we were talking off air, Bill, about, we need the rain. Mm-hmm. Sugar beets, everybody, we need the rain up here. And I said, well, be careful, because too much of a good thing might be a problem. And we've had some of our models trying to crank out 4 to 6 inches of rain by the end of the month, which is still a lot for a 14-day stretch. But you said, that's no problem. We could soak that up easily, especially sugar beets.
It's possible to be that dry where you can soak up 8.5 inches. I've seen that. I don't know that we're that dry right now.
Right.
I do know that we are very dry, and it's probably going to take more than 2 inches to get the soil back where it should be.
Okay.
But you're right, though. Over the just last week, like Friday, I think they had 9 inches in Sisseton. That's a meteorologic near miss.
Yeah, that's and that's typical of this time of the year.
Oh, yeah.
You get those hit-and-miss storms.
Oh, yeah.
Out in the western part of the state, I believe over the weekend I was reading they got 3-4 inches of rain and very strong winds. They had kind of more of a severe weather setup out in the western part of the state. But that's kind of the cycle that we're in right now. And again, we'll be in that for a while. But as we turn the corner into July, we're going to heat things up. For the first 10 days of July, we're going to heat things up and dry things out. So if we get too much rain, we will dry things out. But we have our grocery giveaway, and should we do that now, Addison, or should we wait till the end of the show?
Let's make people wait in suspense. Let's wait.
Okay. I'll give you a hint. The name we have today, he's from Jamestown. So if you know anybody out in Jamestown that registered for this, make sure you have them listening at the end of the show. We'll announce our qualifier.
There you go.
$10,000 in groceries were given away, Bill. $10,000
wow.
in groceries.
Three trips to the grocery store.
Yeah. Well, if you've got a big family, if you live out on the farm.
Well, that could be.
Yeah, that's about three trips to the grocery store. But we have a special guest, and has our guest connected yet, Addison? We don't see him yet. So hopefully, we're assuming that he is going to connect. But it's from a company called Windborne. And if you're wondering what Windborne is, this company launches weather balloons, and you're probably saying, well, wait a minute, the National Weather Service launches weather balloons, but this is different. These are high altitude and sustaining weather balloons, which kind of circle the globe. So what they'll do is get very important information over areas that don't really receive any information. In other words, when our planes are up there, jet airplanes, when they're flying over the oceans, they're gathering some data, but for the most part, all of our weather balloon launches are over land areas. Well, we know most of the Earth is covered by water, so these weather balloons are actually gathering more and more data over the ocean surfaces, which in turn is going to help with forecasting in our computer models. So
they might just notice a hurricane before it gets here.
Yeah, well, let's hope we know ahead of time. But yeah. But no, it is. Ran across the article, and we invited John. I believe John's one of the owners. On the air with us, and we're expecting John to come on here shortly. But I really found the article fascinating because I don't know how many people know about it, and we were joking off air. I hope they don't think one of his balloons is a Chinese air balloon and shoot it down.
Or in China, they think it really is an American balloon that's looking at things it shouldn't look at.
And maybe that's a question we'll ask him. Have you ever had one of your weather balloons shot down? And if not, how come?
How do you manage that? How do you fly around the globe and not get in trouble somewhere?
Right, exactly. So, again, we'll have more on that. But, the company is Windborne. If you have any questions for us or for our guests, feel free to give us a call, 701-293-9000. Again, that's 701-293-9000. Throughout the rest of the afternoon. So, Bill, tell us a little bit more about yourself. So, are you a sugar beet farmer?
I used to be. I am a retired sugar beet, corn, soybean, spring wheat.
Oh, you did everything.
We also did durum for a while and gave up when started raining again. You show a field of ripe durum a glass of water and it gets out of contact for what they want for spaghetti. And same thing with navy beans. We were always waiting for the last 10 acres of navy beans to get ripe, and that meant a combine was sitting still while we were working on soybeans.
Okay.
And so we got out of navies as well.
What was your favorite thing to grow and harvest?
Oh, gosh, I really enjoy soybeans, but I also really enjoy being a shareholder at Crystal Sugar. Being part of the sugar beet community is different. Mm-hmm. It gets in everybody's blood. There are so many people that work at Crystal Sugar who have worked there, they retire after 45 years.
They must like it, obviously.
Oh, obviously, yeah. And that was part of I was on the board of directors at Crystal Sugar, and our policy was to be the preferred employer in the Valley. We want everyone thinking, I hope I get a job at Crystal Sugar someday.
Are they hiring?
Oh, always. Yes. Always? Oh, okay. Yeah. Out of 1,200 people, there's quite a bit of churn, and a lot of that hiring happens in the summer.
Okay.
We've gone down, thanks to our vice president of administration, Lisa Borgen. We're down into the junior high level, in encouraging kids to come out and check out what it's like to be an electrician or a boiler operator in the summer.
Interesting.
And if we like them and they like us, well, we'll put you through school.
I like it. Well, we're coming up on break here, so when we come back, hopefully we have our guest, John, from the company Windborne. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking with him about these high-altitude weather balloons and how they are going to hopefully improve our weather forecast. We'll have more on that coming up after the break. Well, welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And I want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. And we're going to be talking all weather. I shouldn't say all weather. We talked a little bit of ag earlier here with John. But we got a special guest on this afternoon. I was reading an article online about these high-altitude weather balloons that are a little different than the weather balloons that the National Weather Service launches, and how we're getting more data from these weather balloons and how this could actually improve our forecasting. We need it some days, that's for sure. So, joining us today is John Dean. John's CEO of a company called Windborne. So, John, welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, what's that? Well, so tell us a little bit about your company and how did you get this started? It's a great idea. And how long have you guys been around for as well?
Yeah, so we've been around for about 6 years now. So Windborne was started back in 2019. And so we fly long-duration weather balloons all over the planet. As we speak right now, we probably have 100 balloons aloft over the Northern Hemisphere. And we launch these balloons. They fly for months to weeks at a time. And they collect weather observations. So, yeah, they're similar to traditional weather balloons of the variety that NOAA launches all over the country, multiple times per day. But the main difference is that they fly much longer than a traditional weather balloon. So a traditional weather balloon, you launch it, it'll rise, it'll pop and fall back down. It gives you like one profile of data over your launch site. Mm-hmm. And that's really important for weather forecasting. But the challenge is because they only fly for 2 hours, you can't launch them over remote areas. And a lot of the weather that affects the United States, talking about over oceans, right? When you have hurricanes in the Atlantic or atmospheric rivers in the Pacific, and you get cyclones in the winter from north. And so you want to have in-situ observations all over the planet. If your balloon can fly for much longer, you can launch them over land and have them fly around the globe. And so as we're speaking, we have dozens of balloons over oceans and over areas that are otherwise very hard to monitor. And then we take that data, we both sell it to NOAA, and we also use it for our own weather modeling. We use it to improve weather forecasts.
So, John, how do you get your balloons to stay up where the weather balloons from the National Weather Service, they go up to a certain height and bam, they pop and they're only – how do you get yours to stay up longer?
Yeah, so it's actually a very simple concept. And when we started, it was like nothing revolutionary at all. It was just the idea that we vent gas from the balloon and we drop ballast so we can change altitude. So traditional balloons, when you fill them with gas and they go up, there's no way for them to stop rising. So eventually they rise and rise and rise. They get bigger and bigger and bigger. Eventually they pop and come back down. Mm-hmm. So when we started this, and this started out of a college thing we were working on, totally for fun, by the way. We were not weather people. My background was I worked at SpaceX for a summer. I was interested in aerospace. And when you're in college, you can't really do a rocket or a satellite project on a kind of a student budget or timeline. But balloons are almost space. And so that's what I got into it. And we're like, hey, what if we just like put a valve on the top so we can vent gas off and stop rising? Problem then is then eventually you start falling back down again, you can't go back up. So we have a way to drop ballast and to rise. And so the idea is like, you know, just taking advantage of buoyancy. It wasn't nothing revolutionary. There were other types of balloons that you could drop things or vent gas from to control altitude. But the difference is that no one's kind of done them using modern day electronics and modern day scale. And so we basically built this balloon that costs very similar cost to a traditional weather balloon. It leverages the kind of electronics that are in your smartphone to be able to do altitude control, to fly longer. And then just using simple concepts of buoyancy control, we can now fly for weeks. And so we looked around at who else was flying weather balloons and what other balloon companies there were. And no one was doing this kind of long-duration weather balloon. And we're like, wow, we should build this. If we did, we could greatly improve weather forecasts.
That's great. Well, that's fascinating, John. This is Bill. I'm kind of curious, do you ever catch a balloon after it's gone all the way around the planet?
That's a great question. So we just started an app for people to find our balloons when they're landed. So we're in contact with them through satellite communication. They have GPS, so we know where they landed. So we're launching a platform for people that they're called radio sound hunters. These people collect traditional weather balloons as a hobby. And so we actually got in contact with this network of people. And so now we're launching an app where anyone can basically find a downed Windborne balloon, return it, and then send it back to us. Oh. So we've done probably a few dozen recoveries so far. Most of our balloons go unrecovered, and that's the same way that traditional weather balloons work. Unfortunately, every day the U.S. government launches about 180 weather balloons. Most of those are not found. They become environmental waste. And so our balloons operate in the same regime, but we collect much more data per waste produced. But long term, we're looking to try to get this network of people collecting balloons, and we want to collect the vast majority of the balloons that we land.
So have your balloons ever become a national news story, some other country, and shot down by a fighter aircraft?
Good question. No, we've always, I mean, whenever we hear some of the news, we're always like, wait a minute, was that one of our balloons? But it never has been. We do communicate the location of our balloons with a number of different agencies around the globe for airspace monitoring. But when you're below a certain weight limit, you're able to fly very freely around the globe with minimal restriction. So there's a couple different pieces of legislation, some U.S.-based, some international under the U.N., but it allows lightweight weather balloons to fly around the globe. So all the balloons that make news stories, they're typically much, much larger, and those are not permitted to fly legally, and that's how the problems arise. But we always worry that someone will like misidentify one of our balloons and think it's bigger than it is, but to date that hasn't happened yet, and that's why we communicate a lot about our balloons.
And I bet you have to deconflict with some airline routes as well, don't you?
Yeah, so there's actually no like laws around need to deconflict, because when you're under a weight limit, the idea is that you pose a smaller risk to aircraft than birds do by a large margin. And so we actually are not a systemic hazard to planes. That being said, though, we do autonomous avoidance. So like if we're at so we fly throughout the entire atmosphere from surface level up to the lower stratosphere, but we avoid spending time like loitering in like, you know, around 30,000 feet in flight quarters. And if we are, we have automated software that gets out of the way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we do what we can to make sure we don't cause a problem to the aircraft. But in the unlucky event of an airspace collision, we would cause zero damage effectively to a plane.
And your technology in the face of all the sunspots we have right now is probably more reliable than all the satellite technology.
Yeah, that's right. So there are a couple of things. So satellites are really important for weather observation, but they're very sensitive, right? So yeah, things mm-hmm. like sunspots can affect them. Also, the advent of 5G. Cause more of the radio spectrum to be used on the ground by cell phones. And it actually messes with a lot of weather satellites as well. And so it's really useful to have a system of balloons like Wimborne does. And they actually work together, right? So when we sell observations to NOAA, they can use those observations to help correct the satellite data to make the satellite data more effective in light of issues. And so satellites and balloons are very like symbiotic weather technologies.
And John, are all these balloons launched in the same site from where you guys are located? How does that work?
Yeah, we have about eight sites now on the globe. So we have three sites in the United States. So one in California, where I'm based in the Bay Area, where we're more headquartered. Then there's a site in Alaska and also upstate New York. We're doing five additional launch sites in the United States over the next few months. This is one to get more launch sites to be able to observe hurricanes. And also because the U.S. government's having trouble launching radio sondes, we're focusing more on the United States to get more U.S. coverage to fill that gap of traditional weather balloons. But globally, we have about eight different launch sites. We have sites in South Korea, Guam. We have a site in Kenya. And so we have a big network of sites.
How many sites again? Did you say eight or 80?
Yeah, about eight, right? Eight, yeah.
Eight.
Eight.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. And where do you see your company, let's say, in... let's just say 10 years, how many sites would you like to expand to?
Yeah, it's a great question. So this is kind of changing every day based on the platform performance and what we see in the winds. But the long-term goal is to build the full-scale constellation that we're building will be about 10,000 balloons aloft at once, which sounds crazy. It sounds like an insane number. Where that comes from is basically, if you look at the United States, there's basically one traditional weather balloon launch site every 150 miles. So it's spread all in the country.
Right.
We want to have that kind of density over the entire Earth. So if you take the area of Earth and you divide it by, you know, 150 miles squared, you get about 10,000 balloons. And the actual cost of flying that many balloons is actually a small fraction of what's currently spent on traditional weather balloons. And that's because our balloons fly much longer. So you only need to launch 300 of our balloons per day to hit that target. Currently, 1,000 traditional weather balloons are launched every day. Mm-hmm. So that's how many balloons you want to have aloft. And then it's not totally clear. Probably between 30 to 60 launch sites will be the number to get to that scale of coverage. And the reason why you only need a few sites is because the balloons travel a long time, right? So you only need to have around 30 to 60 on the globe. Today we have 500 sites, and we as in the human race, it's 500 traditional weather balloon launch sites on the globe. And so it's a small fraction of launch sites, a small fraction of the balloons, but you get more coverage because they fly for a long time.
And when you say they fly for a long time, approximately how long do these balloons stay aloft gathering vital weather information?
Yeah, so this is kind of constantly increasing. Right now, I think our average endurance for this month is around 12 days. But our longest flights can fly for 2 months. So there are a couple different things we're doing to increase the duration of each flight by optimizing the platform further.
So when these balloons are aloft, when the National Weather Service launches these balloons, like you said, they go up, you gather a column of data, near the National Weather Service site. Do yours just do they rotate around the globe in that 14-day period or however long they're up and gather information as they're circulating the globe?
Yeah, that's right. So on average, a balloon will maybe circulate the globe maybe like one or two times in its lifetime. It depends on where it is. If you're in the tropics, the winds are much slower. But if you're in the mid-latitudes, like the United States is, we'll have many balloons just kind of fly around the globe a few times. And then while they're flying, they're always going up and down. So they're continually falling down to surface level and then rising back up to the stratosphere. And that's critical. So there were other types of long-duration balloon platforms before we started Wimborne, but they would always travel at a fixed altitude. But they'd be only in the stratosphere.
Right.
If you want weather observations, you want to collect data throughout the entire troposphere and the lower stratosphere. And so the key part of our platform is that while we're in flight, we're always rising and falling, getting these full vertical profiles, just like a traditional weather balloon does. But we do multiple of them per flight rather than just one.
Wow. That's, to me, that's fascinating. I love technology, and you know what? This is going to go a long ways in helping to get more accurate forecasts out. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour, John, so we're going to take a quick break. But if you have any questions for John, feel free to give us a call, 701-293-9000. That's 701-293-9000. I know I've got a boatload more questions, John, in a couple of them. You know, how did you get this company started? I know you said something about, you know, you kind of messed around with this in college. Are you worried about other companies kind of mimicking you? Do you have trademarks on all this? So we'll ask those questions. And again, I've got a lot more as well. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our special guest host, Bill Hale. And our special guest of the day is John Dean. John is the CEO of company Windborne, who they launch high-altitude weather balloons that, unlike any other weather balloons that are launched by our National Weather Service, these circulate the globe. And John, before we went to break, and I was talking with Bill, our guest here, off-air, you've been doing this for, I believe you said, 6 years, and other companies have tried it but not been able to perfect it like you guys have. What is preventing you guys, I'm guessing you got trademarks out on it, from another company saying, hey, you know what, we can do this as well?
Yeah, so we have both patents and trademarks on some key things, but actually I don't think of those as that important for a moat for the business. So kind of the Silicon Valley ethos is like, you don't actually worry too much about IP. You just work. You build the best engineering and operations team in the world, and then if anyone wants to compete with you, you just dominate them in the market with a better product. So there are some companies that are trying to kind of imitate exactly what Windborne does, and I actually love to see that because one, it kind of really validates what we're up to now. It's like when you're doing so well that someone tries to copy you, it's a good sign for your business. And then I would actually say the kind of the biggest moat for what we do is that we have these 8 launches from the globe. We have this, you know, we have our own manufacturing line. We manufacture all of our balloons in California. We're doing about 400 balloons per month. And so to kind of like replicate that operational stack takes a lot of work and effort. And we'll always have this kind of advantage. The other part of the business is that we do weather balloons. That's what we're talking about here. But we also do AI-based weather forecasting. There are other kind of product lines that we have within weather that are powered by our balloons. And so we're a company that does a lot of things. We do a lot of engineering. We just move really quickly. And so if anyone tries to compete with us, they'll just be many, many years behind. And so I actually kind of like also seeing, I'm an advocate for the commercial weather industry. So, organizations like NOAA and National Weather Service, I would like them to embrace public-private partnership more and kind of use the products and services that private companies provide as a way to kind of, do data collection for lower cost. And competition helps make them more legitimate, right? Like if Windborne's the only company selling a service, people get the question of like, oh, well, you guys have a monopoly. How do we know you're not going to jack the prices up?
Right.
If we have competition, it's actually better for everybody. So I think overall competition is really good.
And I think it's with the layoffs with the National Weather Service recently, I would think that would benefit you guys as well in the private firm. Yeah. Now, what about the balloon?
Yeah, so there's been.
Go ahead. Sorry, John. No, go ahead.
I was saying there's been increased interest. From NOAA to work more with Windborne to kind of fill some of the gaps created by layoffs. And we definitely want to enter a world where Windborne is only one of many companies in the private weather space, so that NOAA has options to buy and sell the best products.
Good deal. Now, we had a couple people ask, are your balloons environmentally safe? What happens when these land in the ocean? And you know what I mean. Are they environmentally safe?
Yeah, no, that's a good question.
Do they disintegrate? What happens?
Yeah, so we've optimized our balloon platform to be the minimal possible footprint that it can be for data collection. And so like I mentioned, every day around the globe, 1,000 traditional weather balloons are launched and only 20% get recovered. And those balloons, they have batteries in them, they have electronics in them. And so the background is that a lot of environmental waste gets produced by traditional weather balloons. And this is unfortunate, but it's also highly necessary because if you didn't have traditional weather balloons, you wouldn't have accurate weather forecasts. The damage caused by inaccurate forecasts would far outweigh the downsides of this environmental waste. But at Windborne, our goal is to make that smaller. So our balloons do still have that limitation of becoming environmental waste when they're end of life. We make them as environmentally friendly as they possibly can be. But the key detail is that on a per data point basis, because the balloon can fly for weeks rather than hours, we fly way fewer balloons for how much data we're collecting. So this means that we produce much less waste per data point. And the long term is that as our balloons fly longer and longer, we can do more and more collection of balloons and hopefully get that down to zero. One thing we also do is we work with a couple of different companies that do environmental waste collection. So for every pound of plastic that might go into the environment from our balloons, we pay these like plastic offset credits to have that removed from the environment and environmental waste. So we're always doing what we can to make the footprint minimized. So it's definitely not zero. That there's some cost there, but we care a lot about getting it down to as low as it can be.
Excellent. Do you see in your future where you could try biodegradable plastic?
Yeah, so the plastic, some of the plastic we use actually is there's different grades of biodegradability, and some of it is, but even biodegradable plastic still lasts for, you know, it can last for years in the environment and just degrade slowly. And so basically what we actually focus more on is just minimizing the amount of material, so making the balloons as small as possible. That's actually better for the environment than just trying to go to a biodegradable plastic, because biodegradable is often semi-marketing. It's not actually as good as it sounds. But yeah, we generally just do what we can to minimize the footprint per balloon.
Oh, and smaller works better for what you're trying to do anyway. So, okay.
Exactly.
Where do you see yourself and your company in 5 years and then again in 20 years?
Well, I'll be honest. 20 years is pretty long. To me, 5 years is like, you know, already a very long time. I think it's like that time horizon. But our goal is to build this constellation. We call it Atlas, 10,000 balloons aloft. We want to be at that point in 5 years from now. And so if you fast forward to the future, we'll have balloons all over the globe. We'll be one of the largest weather data sources on the planet. And then we'll also be one of the largest weather forecasting companies that exist. So we sell a line of products for both AI-based weather forecasting. We also have a commodity trading product called Wimborne Delphi. It's a platform for commodity traders to help better price contracts or futures for agriculture products, for price of electricity. We just launched that a couple months ago, and that's been growing pretty quickly. And so that portfolio will that product portfolio will start taking over most of the revenue, and we'll be kind of one of the largest vertically integrated weather companies that exists. Like I mentioned, when I was in college, I worked at SpaceX, and I really like how SpaceX has like, you know, created public-private partnership in the launch industry for space. They do rockets, they do satellites. We're kind of similar in the weather industry. We fly balloons, we do weather forecasting. We're a full vertically integrated weather company that provides services throughout all the different parts of the weather stack.
And I want to repeat that. While you were in college, you worked for SpaceX. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did an internship my junior year of college.
He's a pretty smart individual.
Evidently.
No doubt about it. Well, John, the information you gathered that you get from your weather balloons, you said they're using AI. Are they used in any of the supercomputer models that we use to forecast, like the GFS, the European model, any of those models as well?
Well, so we the data we collect actually feeds those models like GFS and ECWF. So NOAA's been a customer of ours. National Weather Service buys observations to augment the data they collect, and that's a growing line of business for us. And so I think in a few months it'll be going live into GFS, which means that if you look at a GFS forecast, that's being improved by our weather balloons. And then the same thing's happening with the European model. So the European model will also start assimilating our observations in the near future. And then when we run our AI-based weather model, we assimilate our observations, and we also use the initial conditions from GFS and from IFS as the initial conditions for our AI-based weather model called Weather Mesh. So currently we do a mix of using the physics-based model data assimilation cycle, and then we have our own AI-based data assimilation cycle. So it gets really technically complicated really fast, but short answer is, yeah, we both contribute to those models, and we also use the outputs of those models for our forecast as well.
So you said your AI model is called Weather Mesh, is that correct?
Yep.
How is that compared to the other either short-range or long-range models? With the research you've done, has it been more accurate, the same, or it's something that's still a work in progress?
Yeah, so our model specializes on kind of the 1 to 14 day time horizon, right? So the medium range forecasting. Right. And so we went live last week on a public benchmark that Google hosts called Weatherbench. And we actually are currently the top model on Weatherbench for accuracy for most variables. So for things like temperature, wind speed, precipitation, we actually beat all the other models on accuracy, and that's as measured by root mean square error. But you know, the thing is, AI has, so they're higher accuracy for certain things. So for a hurricane path prediction, for example, AI models are much better than GFS or IFS. But for hurricane intensity prediction, AI models are still limited in comparison. And so I would say Weather Mesh is it's actively operationally useful. We have customers that are using it every day, but it doesn't mean that it's better at literally everything, right? I mean, a weather model is a very complicated system.
Sure.
Every model has its own quirks it's better at. So I wouldn't want to say you rely on the world if Weather Mesh is better than everything else, period, full stop. It's always, you know, you want to mix of models. And so there are things we're much better at. There are things that for these models are still better at.
And it's like, you know, I tell interns or people that are wanting to get into weather, I'm like, listen, never, ever, ever rely on just one model. When you're putting together a forecast, think of when you were a little kid and you're putting together a puzzle. There's a bunch of pieces of the puzzle that you have to do to make an accurate forecast. Bill, you got a question for John.
So tell our audience, NOAA is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And I actually worked with NOAA when I was in the Air Force back in 1981. I supervised software development of a program called Search and Rescue Satellite Aided Tracking, We put transponders on NOAA weather satellites back then, and the system is still in use today.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's great. That's great. Well, John, thank you so much for joining us today. If anybody wants to get more information on your company, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Yeah, I'd say visit our website. We have a contact form there. We also are active on social media, so LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. I'd say go to our website. It's windbornsystems.com.
Great. John, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And but I'll tell you what, I'm no fortune teller, but I've got a funny feeling that your company is going to do really, really well. So we wish you nothing but the best.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, John. Well, when we come back, we will have a recap on the weather, let you know when this rain is going to end, and we will also shout out a qualifier's name for our $10,000 grocery giveaway. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Want to thank everybody for joining us. Well, we have a qualifier for our $10,000 grocery giveaway, and today's qualifier is Chris Kropp. Chris from Jamestown. Chris Kropp, you have 9 minutes and 70 seconds to call 701-293-9000. That's 701-293-9000. Chris Kropp out in Jamestown. If you know Chris and he's not by the phone, might want to shoot him a call, or if he's not by the radio listening, you might want to shoot him a call saying, hey, you got to register for $10,000 worth of free groceries.
What an appropriate name. He's going to bring the crap in.
There you go. See? So Chris Kropp out in Jamestown. Again, you have about 9 minutes left to call, 701-293-9000. So Bill Hale is guest host for today and tomorrow while Bridget is out of town. I believe she's teaching.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, she's teaching somewhere here locally, so... Bridget's got a couple days off, and but I'll tell you, that was one of the more interesting guests that we've had on.
Oh, man.
And just to think, I mean, he was a junior in college and working for SpaceX.
Yeah,
I mean, that right there. And then he starts his own company. He's a CEO, and that's, you know, and we can all use, like he said, you know, as long as we can get better forecasts out there to give to the public, to help out, whether it's for grain traders, whether it's for, you know, farmers, who cares? I mean, if we can get better forecasts out, and, you know, with the technology we have now, he had mentioned AI. And when we forecast the weather, the one thing we were always taught is never rely 100%. Never rely 100% on any particular model. Right. Like I said, it's like you have to have that human interaction to be able to say, hey, look at this model is off a little bit. I'm going to adjust this. This is, and you have to, you know, kind of for your local area, your local climate, you have to kind of bring that into effect. There is an AI model right now that's being used. And I'll be honest with you, it's okay. But again, this is something that just came out, and it's not his model. This is a model that the National Weather Service uses, and it's okay. But again, with technology coming over the next 10, 20 years, watch how much more accurate these forecasts become.
Oh, absolutely.
And these meteorologists coming up, man, they're going to have it easy. They're not going to miss forecasts like we used to or still do.
just so we don't wind up with Terminators anywhere.
Oh, please, no. No doubt. No doubt. Well, let's run down a real quick recap of the weather. And also, again, Chris Kropp of Jamestown. Chris, you've got about, let's see, Addison, how much time has he got left to call?
I wasn't prepared to be asked this on the spot. 7 minutes, 51 seconds.
7 minutes, 51 seconds. Again, if you know Chris Kropp out in Jamestown, make sure to let him know, hey, you've got about 7 minutes left to call in. And speaking of weather, taking a look at radar right now, we've got showers and storms. There's a strong storm between Wahpeton and Abercrombie moving east of the river. And the back edge of this rain is just moving east of the Red River right now. Areas around Barnesville getting some heavy rain. Pelican Rapids getting some heavy rain right now. And that stretches up into the Northern Valley. South of Wahpeton, there is nothing. So the far Southern Valley, you're not getting a thing out of this, unfortunately.
And they need nothing. With 9 inches and then 5 inches,
they had quite a bit of rain over the last week, no doubt. And we do have more rain in the forecast as we head throughout the week. Starting with this rain ending today, and again, if you're traveling south on 94 going down towards the cities, they will be getting severe weather, it looks like, St. Cloud southward. if you're traveling down there later this afternoon and evening. For us, though, we'll see improving conditions as we look out to the west. We're actually seeing a few breaks in the clouds. So I am expecting to see a little sunshine as we head throughout the late afternoon and evening hours. So if you have any plans this evening, it should be dry. And we'll see temperatures actually climb a bit. We're in the low to mid-60s here in the FM area, and we'll see those temperatures climb into the low 70s as we head into the evening hours. Winds will pick up a little bit out of the west-northwest at about 10 to 20. Then tonight, partly cloudy, mid-50s, and Tuesday, we're looking at partly cloudy, light winds out of the northwest. A beautiful day between 80 and 83 tomorrow. Ooh, yeah. That's perfect. And then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we're going to have temperatures in the upper 70s to lower 80s. Daytime hours, for the most part, should be dry, although I do see a chance for nighttime storms coming in Wednesday night, Thursday night, and Friday night.
Right? Perfect.
Yeah, so these nighttime storms, yes. Nice. Get a little sun later in the day, dry things out a little bit. And then Saturday and Sunday, they do look dry, temperatures in the upper 80s to lower 90s. So, but it's only a couple days worth of, I'll call it hot weather for this.
Sounds like lake weather.
It is lake or pool weather this weekend. Yeah. And then next week, we'll see another chance of storms coming in on Monday. Now, again, if you follow along with the LRC and how we use that to forecast long term, we are in the active cycle right now, the active cycle of the LRC, where we could get anywhere. I was telling Bill this off air. Over the next 10 to 14 days, we could wind up with 3-5 inches of rain over the next couple of weeks. After that, we dry out. So mark your calendars. We're on about a 41-day cycle. So 41 days from now, we'll be starting that active cycle again. So that puts us at the end of July into early August, where we'll see more active weather like this. So in between, not a whole lot of rain for about 3 weeks in July, and then bam, at the end of the month into early August, we get hit with this active cycle again.
So if your wheat gets ripe, get it in.
Bingo. Bingo. And I believe, Addison, do we have our winner? We do.
Hey.
All right. Well, let's, does he want to go on the air with us or is he shy? Okay. All right. Let's pull, Chris up. Chris, congratulations on qualifying.
How's it going?
Good. I think you're our first, and Addison, our producer, Chris is our first qualifier on Weather and Ag, is he not?
He is. Special.
All right. Congratulations, Chris. Yep.
Well, no, thank you. Absolutely. I was down in the hole shoveling mud on some footings, and my buddy that works for the railroad called me and says they pulled your name, so you better call.
Oh, awesome. Good. Good day. It pays to have good friends, doesn't it?
Well, he said I got to get a mistake if I win.
That's it? Oh, that's nothing. Yep. What would you do with the $10,000 in groceries if you won?
Yeah, well, I would probably. Oh, I know I'd eat lots of beef and lots of ribs.
Oh, love it. Love it.
A man of culture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Chris, thank you so much for being able to be our first qualifier here on Weather and Ag and Focus.
And aren't you glad your friend told you when you're in a hole, stop digging?
Yeah. I know. It's muddy. It's super muddy. So, but. Whatever, but work, right?
Good deal. All right. Well, Chris, Addison's got all your information. So again, congratulations on qualifying, and don't forget to show up at Kingpin's on July 10th, Addison. Yeah, July 10th. So again, hey, congratulations, Chris, and best of luck to you.
Yep, thank you.
All right, you bet. So, right, we got our first qualifier. All and right. Good thing is, but see, that's it, pays to have good friends.
Oh, man.
You know, and like you said, when you're in a hole, somebody tells you to quit digging.
Oh, yeah.
That's good advice. Well, that's going to about do it here for Weather and Ag and Focus today. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Bill, thank you so much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
I believe you are going to, let me check my schedule
here.
Back tomorrow. You're going to be back tomorrow.
I am. We're going to talk about the Retention Authority. That's our guest tomorrow.
Brian Feuder
from Red River. He'll talk about the projects that they've done already and that are going to help with flooding in this area. In fact, one of the biggest projects in this area has been the Maple River Dam, which kept I-94 out of the water in 2009.
Good deal. We'll talk about that tomorrow and more. So don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, that's coming up next.